Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
CHGO Cubs podcast presented by PointsBet. Use code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Hello, everyone. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan. We are recording this late on Sunday, June 26th. You are hearing this in the wee morning hours, probably, of Monday, June 27th. And Brendan and I talked to you on Friday night about the first game of the Cubs series with the Cardinals. So if you missed that episode, we were joined by Ryan Herrera live from Busch Stadium. So check that one out. It dropped on Saturday morning. But we have plenty to talk about with the latter two games in this three-game set. And Brendan, you know, it's been a tough season for the Cubs. Their record isn't good. Mm-hmm. We're barreling towards another potentially traumatic trade deadline. It hasn't gone the way that we wanted it to, but you know what's still fun, no matter what?
What's that,
Brendan?
Nico.
Well, yeah, but on a broader perspective, no matter what
is going on, you know what's still fun? Beating the Cardinals,
when
Corey.
You take two or three from the Cardinals.
Of course, in St. Louis, too. Yeah, and the
FTC,
way they did it,
as always,
and the way they did it too. You come back down 5-0 in that last game of the series, and you win the game in extras in dramatic fashion. So it is a good weekend. You do have to savor these small victories, Corey.
Yes, I am sick and tired of hearing about Tommy Edman and Paul Goldschmidt.
I know,
and whatever a Gorman is. Enough. All right.
We're done.
I don't care about the Cubs record. We've litigated this enough, but it is very nice to take two of three from the St. Louis Cardinals and give that back to them in front of those fans. It's always sweet, no matter what the Cubs situation is. But plenty to talk about in these last two games. Obviously, again, you know, we went in depth on Kyle Hendricks on Friday night with Ryan. So do check that out if you want to hear about Kyle Hendricks specifically. But just to set the table again for the whole series, Cubs do take two of three on Friday. It was a 3-0 win for the Cubs by the aforementioned Kyle Hendricks. 7 1/3, 5 hits, no runs, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. Nico Hoerner with his 4th home run of the year in that game, and he is going to kick off our discussion
in a second here.
Yes, Brendan has been chomping at the bit to talk about one Nico Hoerner. On Saturday, it was a 5-3 Cardinals win. The Cubs tie the game late in the 8th inning with a 2-spot, but the Cardinals responded right back in the bottom half to win that game. Mark Leiter Jr. taking the loss in relief for the Cubs in this one. Adrian Sampson does get the start. We mentioned that, you know, setting up this series, that he had earned that in the previous relief outing, a little over 4 innings in relief, you know, probably about a week ago. So he earned this start, and he did pretty well, Brendan. So we'll touch on that a little bit, too. Yeah. 5 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts for Sampson. A nice outing there. The Cubs getting their runs in that game on an Alfonso Rivas sac fly and Rafael Ortega's 4th home run of the year. And on Sunday, the Cubs winning this one in extra innings. They get 1 across in the 10th. The Cardinals fail to do so. And the pitching on Sunday, another rough one for Alec Mills. So it has been a struggle for Mills since he has returned. 2 2/3, 6 hits, 5 runs, 1 walk, 1 strikeout. His ERA sitting at 9.87 on the season. He gives up 3 homers in this one. Not great. Something else we're going to touch on, and I want to get Brendan's thoughts on. We do see Matt Swarmer in a relief appearance this time. 2 1/3. No hits, no runs, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. So interesting for a guy that we had seen, you know, kind of start to struggle multiple times through the order in those starts. But we did see some flashes of maybe a reliever, and we kind of got a look at that on Sunday. And then it followed with, we talked about this on Friday, Brendan, like the kind of recipe you would have hoped for in Cubs victories. And this is what it looked like on Sunday, even though they didn't get the win until later. They weren't protecting a lead, but they were keeping them in the game. Clean inning from Chris Martin, clean inning from Rowan Wick, clean inning from Michael Givens, inning and 2/3 from Givens with 3 strikeouts there. So a great outing for Michael Givens. And then David Robertson actually picks up the win with 2 strikeouts, no hits, no runs over an inning and 1/3 of work. So great work from the kind of big four, I guess, without Scott Efros, but the big four in the Cubs bullpen really shutting it down. But We talked about how nice it is to win in St. Louis. We kind of talked about everything. We'll get into the specifics, but Brendan, let's just jump into it, right?
Let's do it.
Go ahead.
Please.
Like, please just wax poetic about Nico Hoerner as much as you want.
I've been waiting to do this. Thank you, Corey. Nico Hoerner is on a hot streak here, Corey. On the year, his numbers, his offensive numbers, are above average. His WRC plus is 106. His weighted on base average is 323. His batting average is 295. But the most significant development of Nico is that defense. He has by far the best outs above average for a shortstop in MLB. But like by far. Right now, the total tally for his OAA is 10. The next shortstop behind him, Corey, is Jeremy Peña of Houston at 6. He's almost double that of the most valuable shortstop defensively in the league. And it was not even, what is it, 7-8 months ago? There were, and I think, rational discussions whether he could play shortstop, whether that arm strength could hold up moving from second base. And I understood all that. And they were, again, they were rational discussions. But it's such a contrast when you think about where we were discussing that back in December, back in January, to now. The numbers are staggering, dude. Like, this is really a phenomenal development. And he's on pace, realistically, to finish this season with between 3.5 to 4 WAR. That's incredible, Corey. That could be the highest WAR on this team from the positional stand, from the positional group. Nico Hoerner, Corey. And so, like, I know there is going to be free agent shortstops coming up here in the offseason, and I'm sure we'll talk about whether the Cubs should be approaching these guys. What does that mean for Nico's future? And what I mean by that is you have Trey Turner, Dansby Swanson, Carlos Correa, all going to be free agents presumably. But in the current moment right now, just to take that future discussion away, what a development and what hard work Nico has put in to get to this point. It does make you believe that there's more to come, and that's a really, really good place to be.
Yeah, it's a really exciting development. And one of the things that, you know, and of course, it's we're not even in July yet, so, you know, you still have time to go here. But this is one of those questions that, do I want to say it's been answered? I don't know. It certainly seems that way, right?
What's the question?
The question is, who is he, right? And what do the Cubs have in him, and what type of role can he play on this team going forward? The player that you're looking at in 2022, none of which is really like surprising, right? So that's why I say, you know, it's not even July yet, but we always knew he had really good contact skills and the ability to put up a high batting average and things like that. We always knew he showed that he was an elite fielder at second base, but we weren't really sure. But everything you're seeing, it makes sense. It's not a surprise. It's not stuff that you expect to go away or regress or anything like that. It looks like a player who had these abilities and it's all kind of coming together, right? But it's a huge question potentially answered for the Cubs because, as you mentioned, like there's a ton of talent at short on this next free agent market. And what the Cubs decide to do there sort of doesn't really matter. The main takeaway right now, as you pointed out, when you're talking about him being a potentially 3 to 4 win player, is that the Cubs have a young player who can play multiple positions at an elite level defensively, and he has been an above average hitter. That's it. There you go.
Yeah.
Right? Like, check that one off the box for whatever you're looking at for the team next year. And whenever the next great Cubs team comes around, Nico Horner is going to play elite defense somewhere, and he's showing that he can be an above average hitter. Great. Boom. Right. Check it off. There you go.
And the discussion, you brought up a good point. It's not even July yet. There still is a lot of runway left. I'm sure he'll have to go through more adjustment phases. But the fact that he can play like league best defense at second base, at shortstop, let's entertain the idea that they do sign a shortstop, whoever it might be in the offseason. Let's say it's Correa. Let's say it's Turner. Maybe they go after Bogarts. Maybe they go after no one, right? But those guys might age. And for Correa, for Bogarts, they may be shifted to third base.
Sure.
And so the ability for Nico to play shortstop so well, you know, maybe not the start that he'll play there if they do get a different infielder, but eventually you can transition to shortstop. You can maybe play the matchups, and that's valuable. So again, I don't want to focus on like who they're going to get in the free agency months from now, but right now I think we kind of have to like dwell on this reality that he is the best defensive shortstop in the league, Corey.
Yeah.
Like that, like how he got there too. And we'll hear more about the work ethic, the exact, you know, methods he put in to get to this point. But that is such an important piece of his development. And when you look at his overall game, he has a high contact rate. You know, the power will need to be improved, but he already has 4 home runs this year. It makes me wonder, okay, what can he do next? Is there another gear that he can turn on to hit for more power? Is the plate discipline, although it's typically innate, can that improve? And we have seen within the past 70 plate appearances or so, his chase rate has been better, Corey, about league average over the past shrunken now 50 plate appearances. So that is one aspect of Nico that's not going to be in the numbers, but you're seeing so many coaches talk about the work ethic, the baseball intellect, the leadership ability, and those all combined, I think, do suggest he could be better and kind of break those projection molds as well.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that is particularly exciting, and I saw a lot of people talking about it, and I know our guy Ryan Herrera wrote about it over at allchgo.com, so do check out his piece. He's hitting the ball hard, and really this is something that I think you notice on a daily basis, right? And, you know, you and I have talked before about exit velocity and some guys, you know, maybe getting unlucky, and sometimes it feels like that the numbers suggest that, but it never really bears out. Right, David Bodie has kind of always been one of those guys where he hits the ball hard, but no matter how many times we said that, it you know, his expected numbers maybe were better, but the ball never ended up falling, right, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
What you're seeing for Nico, though, is from 2019 to 2021, he had 4 barrels, if you're looking at the Baseball Savant numbers. He has 7 this year.
Already.
Alone. That's 4%. Of his batted balls have been barreled up. In 2021 to 2019, going backwards, it was 1.6%, 1.2%, 1.5%. So he is clearly has done something that is allowing him, and this is something that you wanted to see from him, Brendan. It was your sort of number one thing. A little more oomph, right?
We're
behind that bat and you're seeing it. I mean, the numbers just bear this out. His expected numbers are all better than they have been in past years. He's lowered that K rate a little bit. And, you know, you've also seen it, four home runs. We talked about this a little bit on Friday. We joked about it. Like, you know, we were in the CHGO office talking about, you know, how many would him and Madrigal hit combined, right? And I don't remember if the number was higher than four, but Nico,
it's absurd.
The overall takeaway, right, is you're sort of laying out all these defensive numbers that put him at the top of the league, right? He's made improvements on offense, and even in the year last year where he does end up getting hurt, it's only 170 plate appearances across 44 games, but he had a 104 WRC plus last year too, so he's 4% better than a league average hitter last year, right? And so the fact that he's been able to be at 106 so far this year, right, that now you're, if you're adding the 212 plate appearances from this year onto last year, it's a pretty significant sample of him being an above league average hitter. With when you're an elite defender, the main takeaway, right, is that what we're looking at right now is unquestionably a valuable starting position player on whenever the Cubs are good again. Nico's going to be one of those guys, and he's gonna be at this rate, Brendan, going to be a pretty significant contributor to that group.
Yeah, and I want to see how he adjusts come August, come September, because there will be that time. But the way he's adjusted recently, there was a brief stretch there where he was struggling, where his wOBA did go dip around 290. And so his success in his last 50 plate appearances has boosted his numbers back to above league average. But you want to see him go through that process because the health has not been there for Nico in his career yet. And so the, like how we talked about Alex Ali last year, going through a full season, David Ross said that was so important for Alex Ali. And unfortunately, he got injured in spring training, but that was really important to the coaching staff and the ability to project Alex Ali as a guy. And, you know, for Nico, I can be so excited about him. You know, we're all fans there. But at the end of the day in this discussion, we still need to see more to get that confident idea, because we've had similar discussions, albeit not like this, with Ian Happ in years past, where it does appear as if he made changes to his discipline and power going back to 2018, 2019, and ultimately he had difficulty adjusting. Now, I don't think that will be the case for Nico, given that Nico's underlying traits are so unique. The ability to make so much contact by Nico. Few guys can do that. And Corey, even in this last stretch, in the last 50 plate appearances, his own contact rate is 99%. I mean, let that sink in for a second. 99% of the times he swings at pitches in the strike zone, he makes contact. That's an absurd number. So a little bit different than the Ian Happ scenario, but nevertheless, within that general context, you want to see him adapt. And hopefully by August and September, the discussion is, all right, you know, can Nico be a shortstop of the future? It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of, okay, who do we supplement Nico with?
Right.
That's the exciting potential reality I think we'll be facing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it was a good point you brought up with Alex Ali and, you know, getting those full seasons, because I think that was something that was especially frustrating when you go back to prior years when Nico had gotten hurt and, you know, things had kind of derailed his season multiple times now, is right. That especially for a hitter like him who has such a strong ability to make contact, and you know, you always were, okay, we need to see a little more power. We need to see a little more slug for that bat to be, like, really, you know, valuable. That's why it's so frustrating when a guy gets hurt and it kind of derails that progress, aside from the obvious, you don't want guys to get hurt ever, is that it always felt like, okay, like, he's getting this experience, he's getting this playing time, but he needs this full season to make those adjustments for, okay, I can make contact at the big league level, but how do I change this? How do I change the approach even just a little bit so that I'm starting to slug a little bit more, hit the ball a little harder, maybe not all the time, but pepper in, you know, at this rate, maybe he ends up with like, you know, 8 to 10 home runs, something like that, 7 to 10, whatever it is, right? And those are the adjustments that kind of get cut short when you're only able to play in 40 games a year.
Right.
You know, you don't get to continue making those strides because things just start, you know, and you're trying to kind of get your footing there. And then, you know, everything gets kind of taken out from underneath you. So, you know, it's only 58 games, I think, for him so far. And he did, you know, get knocked over by an umpire. You know, they're like almost conspiring against him to prevent him from, but he's determined. So yeah, like, you know, the key is, you know, stay healthy and continue making these adjustments, because like, even just watching it, Brendan, like, it's really clear that like something is happening. Things are clicking. The pieces are kind of fitting in a way for him to kind of build this more complete profile.
It's making me so happy, Corey. It's so fun.
It's a big deal. We talk about, end up talking about some of these same guys because them being answers to our questions is a big deal, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you're seeing so far.
And for me, I have the fan side, right? Like, you want to see Nico succeed just because he has that attitude. He, you know, I love shortstops, right? And the difficulty getting such a strong defensive shortstop is problematic for several other teams, and the Cubs have been fortunate to not have that problem for a long time. And so we saw the consequences when you don't have a shortstop last season. And so in my mind, it's like, all right, you know, if Nico can do this, that would be so huge for this team. It's also, it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Like, you see the plays he made, especially the one to save the game in the last game of the Cardinals series. Like, that, how fun is watching that? That is baseball athleticism at its finest. So it's just so good to see.
It's also nice to, you know, that if he is one of those players that we can count on going forward here, that he has this particular profile, right? Because that was a profile, you know, you saw it when they went out and got Madrigal and just the guys that they traded and decided not to re-sign, et cetera. Like, clearly there was an effort to make more contact throughout the lineup, get away from some of the three true outcomes guys, things like that. And so to have a guy where you're like, okay, like, his main skills are defense and making contact, it's a lot easier.
And speed.
And speed, yes. He ranks, I think, in the 99th, 92nd percentile for sprint speed.
Yes, he does. Correct, yes.
And he, like, it's easier, I think, at least the Cubs, it seems to have been easier in the last few years, to go out and find guys who can slug, right? And just hit home runs, and maybe they don't hit for average, and they take walks, things like that. The Cubs have had a ton of players like that, right? This has been very hard and elusive for them to find, and it appears as though they have found it.
Yep. Okay, quick break here from our sponsor, PointsBet. The best way to support CHGO is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. If you do that right now, you'll get 2 risk-free bets up to $2,000, but that's not it. If you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you will receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, including those pieces by our own Ryan Herrera on Nico Horner, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from that CHGO locker, all for making more than a $50 first-time deposit at PointsBet. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com and we'll help you out. Your home for live in-play betting just got even better. See an edge in the game you're watching. Is your favorite team prime for a comeback? Don't just watch the game. Bet along with it live. More live betting, more live markets, and faster live cash outs. Follow along with your bets the moment they hit and stay in the live action all game long. Download the PointsBet app right now and use promo code CHGO. So what are you waiting for? It's time to elevate your live betting game. Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants to help, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services. another break here from our other sponsor, Owen. I have to tell you about Owen, which stands for Only What You Need. Owen is 100% plant-based protein shake that gives you nutrition that works as hard as you do. All of their products are free of artificial ingredients, allergen-friendly, no gluten or dairy, and easily digestible. To maintain my elite athleticism, I started drinking these and I just feel healthier and know I'm getting quality nutrition that I might otherwise miss out during my busy day. I might have these at lunch, or if I'm in a rush in the morning, I'll pop one of these really quickly and I know, hey, like I'm covered for the day. And I first heard about Owen from Chicago Bears quarterback Justin Fields, who follows that plant-based diet. Owen and CHGO have partnered up to give you an awesome offer. You can get 20% off your first purchase at liveowen.com with code CHGO20. Join me and star quarterback Justin Fields and try Owen, Only What You Need.
All right, so Brennan, I want to talk about a couple of position players before we get into some of the pitching stuff that we saw on Saturday and Sunday. I want to start with just noting, we try to keep up on some of these guys that, you know, maybe aren't dominating the conversation, but just make sure we're giving them the proper credit. Rafael Ortega has put together a really nice season for himself. He homered in the game on Saturday, again, his fourth of the year, and on the year, hitting .269 with a .359 on base, .398 slug, .336 weighted on base average, good for a .115 WRC plus, so 15% better than league average. And, you know, once again, like we saw last year, he's killing right-handed pitching, doesn't really hit too much against left-handed pitching. I think it's only like 18 plate appearances or something like that. I think he's done okay in those too. But I did just want to bring it up, one, because, you know, he's an example. We rightfully, justfully, you know, criticize the Cubs front office for failing on a lot of cheaper, you know, free agent moves or trades that they made and you know, bringing in guys on the position side. Ortega is not one of those guys. This is has been a really good find and a guy that they brought over for the Cubs front office. And he's an interesting case, Brendan, because he's not a free agent until 2027. He's not even arbitration eligible until 2024. He's got, you know, he's on the 1 year deal for now for 2022 with the Cubs. He is out of options, but at just under $800,000 a year, Brendan, like he's in that camp where, like, I think as you head to the deadline, like, I think he's an interesting player.
That
may interest teams that need an outfielder that can hit right-handed pitching. He sort of falls in that same bucket, though. Like, he is 31, so maybe, you know, you want to capitalize on this now if you're the Cubs, but if you need somebody to hit right-handed pitching and play the outfield next year, like, he really seems to just be able to do that. This is 2 years in a row now where we've seen a pretty clear performance from him, and a big credit to him. He struggled to start this season in 2022, mightily he struggled to start this season. And he's one of those guys that has done everything the Cubs have asked of him, right? He's led off, he's platooned, he's pinched hit. He's gone through stretches where he's playing every game, it seems, and he just, you know, shows up and does his job, and he does what he does well. So I just, you know, wanted to make sure that we pause to give him some credit after he hit a home run this weekend.
Yeah, he's doing well. The outlook for Ortega, in my mind, is never going to be in, you know, this could be off base, but it's never going to be in one that's a primary role, even as a platoon option. The outfield as it's currently constructed, you have Happ in left field, Morel, despite his struggles, which we might get into, in center field, and then Seiya Suzuki's coming back, hopefully, anytime now, maybe this week, and he'll be in right field. And then, of course, maybe we'll see Morel kind of get spelled by Ortega in center field. But just going in the future, then you consider, okay, you know, Brennan Davis gets back here, and let's say Happ is part of this team, you know, Ortega's not going to get the significant at-bats. Mm-hmm. So does that mean, okay, maybe we do trade him in the deadline to get something back?
you kind of have to see what the return is. Of course, the free agency not till 2027. I don't know how relevant that is, given he'll be like 37, 38. He's a little bit older, and that's representative of the fact that he's not been a stable big leaguer. So do teams want to go out and trade current value for a guy that's been volatile for most of his career? I'm not sure. I mean, I think like the... I don't want to compare him to Patrick Wisdom, but Wisdom's not, you know, a free agent until 2027. Wisdom has a similar weighted on base average. Wisdom also has platoon splits this year. So if the logic is, okay, let's go out and trade Ortega, then everyone's on the table. Then if you do that, then like, why not trade like Wisdom, given some of the infielders coming up? And even with Morel, okay, just put Morel at third base. That's his natural position anyway. So it makes it like an uncomfortable discussion. I feel like, and by no means am I suggesting to trade Patrick Wisdom, but I do wonder if it just makes more sense to just keep Ortega as, you know, a fourth, fifth utility outfielder, assuming the Cubs are competitive, because the likelihood of you getting back value in the trade market, given his previous instability, seems pretty low in my mind, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things where you kind of have to see what the offers are and, you know, what the front office is interested in acquiring, you know, the types of prospects and things like that. It's just, you know, one of those things where, you know, there's a few guys on this team where it's like, you know, Ortega has provided a particular set of skills, and there's worse things, even when you're a competitive team, than having a guy that, you know, you can rely on to come in and hit right-handed pitching when you need somebody, whether it's off the bench or, you know, starting and things like that. He's led off for this team, obviously, a lot. Like, he's, you know, just shown the ability to do that. And, yeah, it certainly, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to go to such great lengths to carve out a roster spot for someone like Ortega, I don't think, you know, given his age and just where this organization is. But in your roster building, I think there are going to be occasions, and we talk about this a lot. Like, the Cubs have had terrible depth in some years where they were good, not only at the major league level at the back end of that bench, but also in those upper levels of the minors, just as guys to call up in an emergency when guys get hurt, things like that. And a guy that, you know, has for a couple years for you been consistently above average when hitting right-handed pitching, not the worst skill to have. So if there is nothing out there available, I you know, he's shown to be a good guy to have in the organization. You just mentioned the other guy I want to talk about, and I want to touch on Christopher Morel. He has gone through a little bit of a rough patch here, which is to be expected. I don't think it's necessary to sound the alarm, but I do want to kind of get your thoughts on it. So, you know, you look at the last 15 games, a 190 average, 224 on base, 302 slug with 29 strikeouts in just 63 at-bats. So that K rate ballooning in this particular stretch. He also has an O swing rate, you know, swings outside of the zone, that has jumped from 20% to 35% in this 15-game stretch. So again, with someone like Morel, who comes up and catches the world on fire, and the Cubs insert him in that leadoff spot so he can basically just jump all over pitchers, stretches like this are to be expected. Pitchers are going to adjust. They're going to figure out different ways to try and pitch you and get you out, and it's on the players to do the work to get it back. So what have you seen from this stretch for Morel? And, I guess, like I just said, how does he get it back? How does he get back on track?
Morel, like, it's really important for him to get consistent playing time, because right now he's seeing 30% more breaking pitches in this month than his previous month. So the league has adjusted in a way to throw those breaking pitches and maybe capitalize on those breaking pitches by throwing pitches inside the zone that's leaving Morel off balance. His zone contact rate is 71%. That's really low. I just contrasted Nico with a 99% zone contact rate, much lower than Nico's, and basically so is everyone else's. But that's one of the issues that Morel is facing. Now, when you watch Morel, like when I watch Morel, he looks like he's still putting together good at
at-bats in a weird way. Maybe not even like good at-bats, but like some instances, he looks balanced. And he had a walk today, Sunday, in that third game, despite striking out twice. But it appears as if he still sees pitches well. And just given his unorthodox development and his ability over the past couple of years to kind of adjust in unpredictable ways, I feel as if that could also be applied here. And I feel as if we need to get that possibility by playing him like every day. Yeah. Like, I don't think, you know, we'll see what happens when Seiya's back, but I don't think because Seiya's back, Morel's playing time should decrease. Nico talked today about the value of playing every day to be able to learn. And I'm very worried that Morel might lose plate appearances because, you know, Hayward's still on this roster. Ortega has done well. Wisdom is doing well. And I don't want to take the bats away from those guys who also deserve it. But, you know, this team has a fatal flaw in playing Jason Hayward at this point due to reasons that are beyond 99% of anyone's comprehension. So I need Morel to play more. I'm not concerned just given like the eye test, like it's looking okay to me. And the contact rate being 63% versus like 67 to 70% in his previous stretch. Like, yeah, it is much lower, but it's not absurd. When Javi debuted, his contact rate was like 58, 59%. Wisdom in his rough stretches last year, his contact rate was like 50, 55%. So there have been worse stretches. I'm not concerned, Corey. My only concern is Ross is just not going to play him because of this rough patch, try to like play selective matchups. And I think that's a really bad idea for individually for Morel here.
Yeah, I mean, he's 23 years old. So it's totally expected that he's going to slow down a little bit from where he started and going to have to, you know, catch back up to the game a little bit. That this is all very normal and a part of the process. And I think it also pairs well kind of with the discussion we just had about Nico, the points you're making about playing time. Like, he's got to play through it, right? The only way to adjust to the way that major league pitchers are pitching to him is to face those major league pitchers,
right?
Don't look at anything and say, okay, he's, you know, not doing well with these matchups, so we're going to take him out of them. Why? Right?
I'm worried about that.
He's 23. Let him have this time. This season means nothing. Listen, all I'm going to tell you is that I would have to say a prayer for the lovely producers that we have over at the CHGO team for when we're on live, but boy, for when Cody is on live, if they sit this man down to play Jason Hayward. I'm just telling you. I don't think there's any filters. Like, I think swears are okay sometimes and stuff, but the rant that Cody would go on may light the microphone on fire. And so I just genuinely,
I'm worried for him.
For everybody's sake, they should not do that. They should not adjust Morel's playing time when guys come back. It should be adjusted for other people.
But what if they actually send him down to Iowa?
Listen, fair warning. I'm just saying, we may have to put a bail fund together for Cody to get him out of jail. But he would be justified. So, you know, that's a bridge we'll cross when we get there. It's unfortunate that we kind of just assume that the team is stupid enough to do that, isn't it? That's just kind of where it's kind of where we are a little bit.
Given what they're doing with Hayward, how can you not expect anything better?
Yeah, they better not, because and to finish up the point, like it does go to that Nico conversation that, like, something that has been so important for him has been playing through it, right? And it's the same for a lot of these guys. And, of course, that doesn't extend forever. You know, certainly you get to points where it's like, okay, maybe this guy doesn't do well against this type of pitching or this type of pitching. But when you have a guy that was doing so well in Morel, like, it's a 15-game slump, like, big deal. Right? That's nothing in the grand scheme of things. You have to let him play through it because it's the only way you're going to make those adjustments. And it's also one of those things like, yeah, he's young and, you know, of course he's going to have those options. But you always kind of ask yourself those questions. Like, this isn't something you learn at AAA or another level. Like you want him facing the struggle head on, and that struggle right now has been the way he's being pitched by major league pitchers. It's been 15 games. You gotta let this kid work his way out of it. He has been one of the few bright spots on this team. He has shown you he's got the fortitude to do this, the presence, the attitude, the energy, everything, the skills, right? The athleticism. He's got it. Just let him work through this. It's not a big deal. And I'm with you though. Like, yeah, the roster crunch happens. Like, we were kind of worried about this maybe a few weeks ago when he had only been up for a little bit, even though he was like so explosive, that like, well, you know, he's young. Like, maybe they just send him down. You know, he turned 23, I think, like this weekend or last week. It was very recent. You know, so we've already been worried about this. And so it's just kind of this annoying, like looming thing. The ultimate conclusion is just don't send him down. You know what I mean? Like,
there's no reason to not play Morel. Right. I will not entertain any logic of the mashups don't work well. No, the sample is too small to make those conclusions, Corey. If he loses playing time to Jason Hayward, I will fly to Chicago. I will participate in whatever Cody does to get this man in that lineup. It can't happen. Right. This glimmer of hope I have with Morel, Corey, is that he's still batting leadoff despite his shortcomings. So in my mind, now, you know, they had VR bat fifth and they DFA'd him even in that same day batting fifth. In my mind, though, with Morel, because he's batting leadoff, that does suggest Ross is willing to play him in difficult situations as he's struggling. So there is a glimmer of hope.
Yeah, I was going to say that, like, I don't think we have any indication that they're thinking of reducing his playing time, et cetera, et cetera. But like you said, Seiya's coming back soon, so they are going to have to maneuver some of this stuff. And we're just kind of getting in front of it. We're noting that he has been in
being mad.
A slump. The K rate has skyrocketed. It's something you may notice, and that our stance on it is just let him play through it. Let him swim through it. He's gonna swim through on the other side. Just leave him alone. Like, let him do the work. Just let it be.
Okay, another break here from our sponsor, PointsBet. If you enjoy CHGO, one way to help us continue to grow is to download the PointsBet app right now and use code CHGO when you sign up. Not only are you going to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000, but if you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you will receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get that free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. If you have any questions, email pointsbet@allchgo.com and we'll help you out. And in case you missed it, online signup is available in Illinois. You can actually download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. You'll be signed up with the fastest sports book that's easier than ever, so you can start living your bet life in seconds. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants to help, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services.
All right, Brennan, let's get into some pitching. So I wanted to start with Matt Swarmer because I was curious what you thought about that. So as we kind of noted in the beginning, like, he had not done well in those starts overall, but you did see some flashes in those early innings before guys had seen him multiple times, some ugly swings on, you know, that slider of his, and maybe some curiosity. Like, okay, it's pretty clear that especially a guy that doesn't have a super diverse pitch mix is struggling when these guys get more looks at him. They kind of are figuring things out. But how would that play in shorter spurts? So we did see that on Sunday. 2 1/3, no runs, no hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. So still getting the strikeouts and effective. So what did you see from him on Sunday, and how do you, you know, kind of, I know this was something that you kind of tossed around when he was starting, that this might be a potential destination for him and a useful way for the Cubs to use him.
Yeah, so I think his ability to go multiple innings is valuable, either as a starter or either as a reliever.
the likelihood has been it's going to be in that reliever role. The Cubs just have too many starting pitching options when everyone's back. Once Miley comes back, when Smiley comes back, hopefully Alzolay's back soon. Killian, despite the struggles, has gotten chances. And even looking towards the future, it always seemed likely the Cubs would not use Swarmer in like that fifth rotation spot. So this is kind of the role I think most people saw him in. Now, if he were to have broken out and really dominated with that two-pitch mix, and yeah, the conversation would have changed, but it hasn't really changed. So his stuff from like a pitch grader perspective, it's not good. So if you look at Stuff Plus, developed by a lot of different people now, but one algorithm developed by Cameron Grove, his slider rates on a 45, rates as a 45 on an 80 scale. His four-seam rates as a 35 on the 80 scale, below average for both those pitches. Not the best. Swarmer, though, is unique, as we've talked about with Ryan Herrera and on this podcast, Corey, is that his slider has the highest release point in Major League Baseball and also has unanticipated, I don't want to call it gyro action, but it doesn't move as expected. So you have these unique features that most pitchers don't have in the league. And so when you're trying to estimate his run value based on these outlier features, I imagine the error in projecting that is going to be very large. So that's why I always call my attention that Swarmer could be someone that kind of breaks the mold and becomes a valuable guy. I think ultimately that is going to be in the role he's in right now. And I think giving Mills a chance that Ross gave him today, I like that. Now, he got roughed up, gave up multiple home runs, but Mills has really good command, has shown good command in really big sample sizes, and has five pitch types. And he deserves a shot, Corey. He's had success. He's thrown a no-hitter. He's been a crucial part of this Cubs starting rotation stability. And Swarmer got almost three innings of action today. I like it, Corey. I think this is the role he's best suited at, and I'm still curious to see how Mills performs in a starting rotation role.
Yeah, I think that is fair, and you know, again, like worth giving Swarmer the shot there and see if this stuff plays in this type of role, and you know, maybe you can transition him there and have something a little more interesting. As I mentioned in, you know, kind of running through these box scores too, just you know, touching again, really nice day on Sunday in particular for those guys at the back end of that bullpen, and a nice series for especially Chris Martin, David Robertson, who pitched in multiple games in this series and had success, and then Wick with a nice outing on Sunday, and Michael Givens lowering that season ERA to 3.81. It had gone up a little bit, but just nice to see from those guys, especially Martin, Givens, and Robertson. Their main value to the Cubs may come in about a month or so, Brendan. But you know, the performances are all kind of different. But you know, we did see the Cubs make some you know, a flurry of moves with Kimbrel, Chafin, and Tapera last year at the deadline, and it looks like they are certainly going to be fielding some calls if teams are in need of veteran relievers.
Yes. The bullpen has been a little shaky recently, despite Givens has been better. You know, Ethan Roberts is getting Tommy John, unfortunately. That's pretty disappointing given his early season success. And then Roman Wick, his ERA is 4.7 on the season. Robertson had a great outing today, but he's been dealing with some, you know, unfortunate and misfortune with some injuries and everything. So, like, to see the bullpen kind of get back on track is great. And just kind of dialing in on guys who should be here throughout the deadline and going into next year. Wick and his 4.7 ERA, I think that's going to come down. Now, if you look at his pitch graders, again, using Cameron Grove's model, his overall grade is a 60 on the 80 scale, a standard deviation above league average. His fastballs are rating really well. His curveballs are rating really well, both 60 on 80. His cutter is also rating as a 55 on an 80 scale, and his command on all pitch types, every pitch type he throws, is rating above average, despite the fact that his walk rate is almost five batters per game. So I think over time, as the season progresses here, then that's going to normalize out, and we're not going to see him walking like five batters a game on average. I think the walks are going to come down. And then you look at Brandon Hughes, who 3.2 ERA on the year, K per nine of over 11. And then Scott Efros, Corey. I mean, that guy's numbers are absurd. And he has the highest stuff score, overall score, out of that Cubs bullpen than anyone. His K per nine is over 12. His FIP is 1.6. His ERA is around 3. That's been an incredible development. One, like we talk about with Nico and other guys, where the Cubs have him under team control for several more years. So the bullpen, despite kind of that rough patch recently, there's still a lot of exciting, cost-controllable guys that they have. Okay, let's preview the upcoming three-game set against the Cincinnati Reds. Cubs have an off day on Monday when you're likely listening to this, but they'll be back at beautiful Wrigley Field on Tuesday for a night game. We have Keegan Thompson pitching for the Cubs that night. He's 7-2. With a 3.1 ERA, the Cubs will be facing the ace of the Reds, Luis Castillo, who is 2-4 with a 3.7 ERA. And then on Wednesday, the Cubs are back out there for another night game. Justin Steele on the mound for the Cubs. He'll be throwing his first pitch at 7:05 p.m. Steele is 2-5 with a 4.59 ERA. He'll be facing Green for the Reds, who is 3-8 with a 5.66 ERA. Thursday, another night game. Kyle Hendricks pitching that night, 3-6 at 4.9 ERA, 7:05 p.m. start time again. And then the Cubs will be facing Ashcraft for the Cincinnati Reds, who's 4-1 with 3.27 ERA. Some notes that I'll be looking for this series is Morel's playing time, his batting position, whether he remains in that leadoff spot. Maybe Seiya Suzuki will have some news this week before the next time we record, so look out for that. And then Keegan Thompson, Corey, looking for that for another good start, coming off two recently good starts. I think overall that's probably the biggest highlight of this series, just seeing that progression, although I'm still interested to see how Kyle Hendricks looks after talking about his fatigue and his overall physicality apparently returning to him.
Yeah, and Brenton, like in this series too, especially with the Keegan start, looking for more of that slider that we've seen that you identified after the first time he kind of broke that out. And I remember when we were recording that, you weren't really sure if it was a new pitch because sometimes those classifications get mixed up, and indeed it is. So when you look at a start like this one coming up and you've seen something like that get integrated and he's having such success over these last few outings, do you expect to see the way he uses his repertoire continue to change or kind of settle into a particular feel with that slider? Or how do these things usually go when a guy adds another pitch like this to his mix and is having early success like this?
Yeah, the Alzolay might be the extreme example, but Alzolay in 2021, he was not throwing a slider nor a sinker the previous year with that frequency, and then those two pitches became a dominant pitch type. So I feel as if it's more independent to the pitcher himself. Now Keegan's throwing that pitch around 7 to 10 times in his last two starts, so that does suggest he is comfortable with the pitch. And in this small sample now, which is 16 pitches, that pitch rates above average by graders. Its actual stuff grade is a 55 on the 80 scale, so that's interesting. Sliders have the best whiff rate of any pitch types in Major League Baseball, so I'm personally looking to see if he throws that pitch more. With Keegan, his contact rate has been about league average this year, and you want any pitcher to get more strikeouts, more whiffs. So if he is comfortable with the slider, and maybe he can use that pitch in substitution of the heavy cutter usage he typically has, around 25%. And he throws maybe more sliders in addition to those curveballs, which he throws 20%, then the whiffs, in theory, should jump quite dramatically. That's assuming that slider is this good, that the slider is comfortable out of Keegan's hand. But if that is the case, Corey, then we're going to see whiffs. We're going to see some pretty interesting starts. And I don't know. I'm looking at his mix right now, and I'm like shocked that I'm reading six pitch types. Like, that's crazy. We were talking about Keegan only throwing basically two dominant pitch types out of the bullpen 2.5 months ago, and now I'm talking about six pitches for this guy. So this is really fun.
Yeah, I look forward to, you know, the series where we see him and Steele and just watching those outings, because, you know, we came into the season, you know, like Nico, right? Those guys were questions, and I think they're still there. But you just continue to see them make those developments and take those strides. And, you know, with Keegan, it's been adding pitches. With Steele, it's been watching him kind of get more whiffs and settle into, you know, trying to cut that walk total, cut the homer total and things like that. It just is fun to watch. And I would rather be watching them in, you know, a season that mattered, right? And like a competitive race and things like that. But this is the practice that they need to be a part of those moments in the future. And yeah, so it's, I do enjoy these starts. It's, you know, like the Killian one in Pittsburgh, you know, it's disappointing when stuff like that doesn't go the way you want it. But with these two guys, it has, you know, really progressed in a way that you sort of start to see it all clicking for these two. And it's a lot of fun to watch. And when Keegan gives you something new, in a new pitch to watch, it's even more interesting because now you are watching for their success and their continued growth. But now you get to kind of also center it with, okay, let's see how he attacks these hitters. He's got this new weapon. He's got this new toy. Let's see how he deploys it. But other than that, yeah, like, look, a series win on the road against the Cardinals is always fun. And it's series like this are a lot better than the series where the Cubs have, you know, made us all pretty embarrassed to be fans and podcasters and tweeters or whatever you're doing out there. So let's keep doing that. Winning games, you know, not doing things that are embarrassing, etc. I'm hopeful that Seiya comes back. I miss him, Brendan. It's just been a while. He was a very fun presence, and like a lot of these guys, you know, he had struggled for sure, and we kind of had to pause watching and rooting and analyzing him trying to adjust out of it. And that's kind of a frustrating place to pause on. It's almost like pausing a movie at the most anxiety inducing part, right? And you're hoping that it gets solved and things are good on the other side, but until you unpause it, you just don't know. So that's been kind of frustrating. Last thing, I mean, you know, and we don't end up talking about him a lot because it's there. I don't know how much there is to say, but I did just, well, you know, again, hat tip props to Wilson Contreras, you know, the game winning RBI in the game on Sunday, huge game on Sunday, and just continues to be an absolute monster, Brendan. I mean, that's why we don't necessarily dig into it too much. He continues to be one of the best hitting catchers in the league. He's got a 147 WRC plus, a 384 WOBA, and he's just been awesome. And maybe we don't talk about him all the time because we're scared of...
I know, it's your subconscious.
It's easier to, yeah, not get attached. Yeah, no, it's a sick life.
I think that's what it is, Corey.
It's a sick life that we live in. This front office is really doing some irreparable damage to,
I think,
a lot of our
brains. Is that why
we
decided not to talk about Ian Happ this episode? Because we're starting to realize this a possibility, too.
I guess. Maybe. Don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's a weird time being a Cubs fan. I'm not gonna lie. It's pretty weird.
I can tell you, if they ever trade Nico Horner, I'm quitting this podcast. That's actually it for me. I'm gonna check myself into a mental asylum.
Yeah. Well, I'll drive you there, buddy. I'll check you in.
All right. Getting dark.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Anyway. That's all we have for you. As always, we appreciate your support of CHGO and the CHGO Cubs podcast. Cody, Luke, and the boys will have you for the off day on Monday, and then, of course, for pre and post on Tuesday. So be sure to tune in with them. As always, we appreciate your support of Brendan and I and the entire CHGO Cubs operation. Be sure to sign up to check out Ryan Herrera's article about Nico Hoerner and his improved slugging on the 2022 season when you sign up to become a member at allchgo.com. Thank you again for listening. Brendan and I will be back with you when this series wraps up in the middle of the week. We will talk to you soon, and as always, go Cubs.